Today is Sunday. Today is an infamous day. Today is December 7th, 19. Today is 2014. But my first memory of life is December 7th, 1941. My father sitting in the living room listening to the big console radio, and chanting to my mother, who was in the kitchen where good Jewish women used to be in those days. And chanting to my mother, "War! We're at war! We're at war!" And little did any of us realize how many lives would be changed with that war, myself included. I'll pull together. I want to dedicate this shiur today. Talmud died. I've had a lot of bad news over this weekend. Rabbi Gil Marks. I just want to mention to you, Menachem, that in 1976, if you recall my shiur of 2 weeks ago on Monday, I was the Makabe Patish in convincing Adam, Mr. Gris, to give this building to Torah. BMT jumped in, sold the property they had in Givat Mordechai, which they were going to build on, and YU was very worried that BMT would take over the whole building and ultimately this unbelievable property, which today must be worth $100 million, that has building rights for two more big buildings on it, etc. And so what YU came up with, and Rabbi Miller in Washington, Rabbi Miller's letter spells this out. And I explained to you in the Monday 2 weeks ago why I asked Rabbi Miller to write that letter, because I felt he would know more than anyone what went on. I certainly was a kid at the time, and Rabbi Miller was even younger than I am, but he was his father's son, so he knew what was going on. And so YU decided to send 5 students here to establish a presence, and Rabbi Gil Marks was one of the students. He went on to develop an expertise, though, that no other Jew that I know of, no other Rav that I know of has. He became an expert in Jewish cooking, and he knew how to handle carp stove, you understand? And he published, I believe they say here, 5 books. His last book is monumental, Encyclopedia of Jewish Food. It won many awards. Steve, it's for you. It deals with halacha and with the sources and other cultures. And it breaks my heart that at the age of 62, he is upstairs. So I want to dedicate this year in memory of Gil. He studied with me twice in BMT and afterwards in the Kollel. A number of small corrections or addendums. I mentioned the Chatam Sofer, so my Talmud, Dov Reifer from Muncie, writes to me that there are 2 new edited versions recently released of Tshuvat Chatam Sofer. One by Machon Chatam Sofer and a newer version by Hama'ah. The version released by Hama'ah seems to be more comprehensive than the other release. So I call that to your attention. David Newman, I believe, of Cleveland, has Hasidic Yichus. These students are very interesting because Dov was raised in the Haredi world. David evidently has Hasidic Yichus, and he corrects me that I always say the Ungava Rav. He says it's Ungav, Ungav, Ungav. Anyway, don't bother correcting me. You can never get it right. These shtetls. If I'd be a Rebbe, and don't laugh, Alex.
I could have.
No. Chassidic Rebbe. I could have become a Chassidic Rebbe and receive people and give advice and all that goes with it. But I'm not a good person. I have a Yetzer Hara just to sit and learn and be Machadesh. So I flew around any gym. But I would have had a very easy title. It's natural. The Maplewood Rebbe. Follow me? I'm from Maplewood, New Jersey. I built the first Orthodox shul, suburban Essex County. Who else comes from Maplewood? In Seinfeld, George. George comes from Maplewood. So outside of George, I have a monopoly. And the Maplewood Rebbe is easy to pronounce, but he says Ungva. Ungva. All right, so Mislankism. Another correction, I.A. Gordon from New York City, Manhattan. I kept on saying Wycliffe. He says it's pronounced Wycliffe, Ohio. Can anyone confirm that? Because I always heard people say Wycliffe. Wycliffe. All right, Rabbi Kaczynski comes down on my side. Baruch Hashem. All right, let's roll. We saw last week, last week was a very fascinating Sheyura, and we saw that paper, which I believe I may have the only copy in the world, unless Rabbi Shraya saved it, a paper he did for me on to 20 years ago, on the Erev controversy that his father was part of in Brooklyn. And what you see from the paper, and as I told you, they were caught in a catch-22. On one hand, you can't build an Erev in Flatbush in the 1970s without going to Reb Moshe, even if you're not going to listen to him. But you have to give Reb Moshe, by that time was Reb Moshe Feinstein. He was the posek. And Reb Moshe said, you know, I'm opposed. So they said to Reb Moshe, but Rebbe, we have an Yesh Lami L'smoch, you won't oppose us. Rebbe said, no, I won't oppose you. So of course, when the Erev was built, everyone started asking the rabbis, and the word went out that Reb Moshe is not opposed. Well, the way gossip goes, it's a fine line between being not opposed and being in favor. But the Machleket left a lot of bitterness. I showed you the article from the New York Times, the Metro section, the leading article, the year 2000, where they go into a very learned analysis of the Machloket and what's going on, and the Mishkanot Yaakov, and the Beit Ephraim. And you know, you got to give the New York Times credit, at least on that level. Generally speaking, when you read an article in the newspaper, it's 40% right, 30% right. The New York Times gets to about 80%, even 90% right. So you have to give them credit. Their interview with Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik and with Rav Moshe Feinstein that appeared in the 70s are classic interviews. I cited in my work on the Rav, and I've cited the interview with Rav Moshe in my lectures, and Baruch Hashem, I have other problems with the New York Times, but not on the article on the Erev. Now, and that machloket, that heartache. And here I want to cite to you the hesped of Reb Asher Weiss. And you all know who Reb Asher Weiss is. Reb Asher Weiss is, I would say, if we could name a chief rabbi of Jerusalem and guarantee him no politics, Reb Asher Weiss would be our choice. He's a bucky. He's a great Talmud Chacham. He knows how to paskin. And he has breadth of vision. The chairman of his American supporters is no less than a dear student of mine. So it tells you something. Now, he eulogized the tragedy in Harnof. And that tragedy doesn't leave me, as you know. I knew two of the four victims very well. Not just Twesky, Kapinski. He grew up in the Bronx, around, literally we lived 1 minute from each other. So that's his father. So he eulogizes, and he says very humbly, you know, we don't want to give reasons why God did this, why God did that. In other words, you saw it happen to Rebbetzin Basha Twesky, if you're familiar with the Haredi world here. Did they jump on her? Did they rip her apart? Oh, what went on the websites, because she dared to say that this tragedy came about because of the machloikis in the Litvische Welt. But he says we don't want to play God. He's very smart, but he says nevertheless he quotes the Rambam and Hilchot Tainit that's based upon a Gemara. When Saras comes upon you, you have to make a cheshbon and nefesh. And he says, let's make a cheshbon and nefesh. And he goes in just like Bashi Twesky, but coming into it in a way that is not going to bother or trouble some of our warped minds. That the sinat chinam in the Torah world, what goes on? And I want to quote to you something that I just can't get it out of my mind. Hasinim oreret midat hadin, and he says the sinner creates midat hadin. And you read the hesped, and we must do everything to get rid of it. I'm saying he writes in Hebrew here, but I'll say it over in English. And he says, I remember I heard from my Rebbe, Mori Rebbe. And this is his Rebbe, like I quote the Rav Mori Rebbe, he's quoting the Kloisenberger Rebbe, and he says, you all know that my Rebbe lost his wife and 11 children in the Holocaust. And when he survived and he got out, my Rebbe said he never believed there will be a time where one Jew hates another Jew. After what we went through in the Holocaust with the hatred of the Nazis, the hatred of the world, how can we have hatred between Jews? And all I can tell you is, I sign on in capital letters. And if you know what's going on in Panovich, I don't have to go any further. It's just frightening. This is Torah. This is Yirat Shemayim. Pardon me, if I can quote Rakefet, these are monkeys putting on tefillin. Okay? Look at the conference of the Shluchim, the picture, the thousands, the Avat Yisrael that comes across. I don't know, I'm a Litvak, I can't change, but if I wouldn't have been born a Litvak, I would become a Hasid, and particularly a Hasid of Lubavitch. Of course, today they don't have a Rebbe, so it's a little bit harder for me. A Hasid needs a Rebbe. I know the Rav cried, I can tell you, in December of 69, he addressed Chabad in Boston. Yutet Kislev. He was one of the guest speakers at the Fabrengin, the main speaker. When the Rav spoke, everyone else was not just secondary. You were light years beneath the Rav. But the Rav spoke, and there's a recording. It's a poor recording, but I made it out. And the Rav cries in that recording. He says, I wish I had a Rebbe. I wish I had a Rebbe. I wish I could be a chassid. I wish I could unburden myself. That's after the Rav lost three Avelot, 67, his mother, his brother, his wife, which is Churban Beis Hamikdash, the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Chaf Bet. And it's at a time when his Talmidim already are starting to desert him, as the Rav said time and again, though I can wake them up at 4 o'clock in the morning, Sagin Iba Achidish and a Rambam, I can Sagin Iba a Reb Chaim, but my Hashkafa, they run away from. And I quote it in the Rav, I quote Rabbi Lichtenstein, I have it all there, where the Rav says, I'm not frum enough for them, I'm too secular for them, etc., etc. And the Rav suffered on that level. He did. I don't believe he suffered on the level of the Haredi world disowning him, but he suffered on the level that his Talmidim didn't understand him. Atara, Lo Aleinu, sitting Shivi here, so you know her first words to me were, it's about time the Haredim knew how to use Neshek. I'm quoting, end quote. So you see, she's right in our camp. But she told other people that my father had a number of regrets in life. And one of the biggest regrets, that he didn't raise enough Talmidim who were integrated in the Torah and the Western world and can function as limelights in the contemporary world. And it's true that he felt bad. He expressed it to me, he expressed it to Aaron Bad, Sefer Tzadik Livracha. All right, it's an interesting question. Avram asked me if the Rav holds Lachat, he's not here now. Leader, right? Avram Leader asked me if the Rav held Lachat Chilah, we have to master both worlds. That's an interesting question. It's not for now. According to Rav Hirsch, absolutely. According to the Rav, I'm not certain. I see at times he said yes, at times he implied no, but there's a reality today that you have to be in both worlds. The Lubavitcher Rebbe, I think, had a very similar shita. If you asked him, a kid growing up, he would say, go to Beis Yaakov, go here, be narrow. If you were beyond growing up and you already had a broadness, he insisted you remain where you were and continue to influence. He dealt with everyone, and he understood the secret. You don't force people into a straitjacket. Okay, then we saw the tshuva, and I want to give you the source. I don't recall if I gave it last week. I just went into the tshuva. It's Mishnah Halachot Chelik Tetvav Siman Kuf Chaf Tet. And that too is a very unique, interesting tshuva, where they're ripping down their Reuven, and Rav Menashe Klein discusses this, and they quote their three Gemaras. I did it all last week, I'm just summarizing. Three Gemaras where an Erev is destroyed because of a machlokes between Amorayim. And in all three times, so the people ripping it down brought these Gemaras as a proof. We have every right to rip down an Erev. Chazal ripped down a Reuven. And Rav Menashe Klein analyzes the three Gemaras, and all three, he says, you see, the people regret what they did. They were wrong. They made a mistake, and it's all three open Gemaras. So what kind of proof is that? Just the opposite. You have a machloket, so you don't agree, but you can't rip down. You can't say the other party. You can't say the Bet Ephraim is wrong. It's a machloket. Bal nefesh achme, if you wish. Then he says at the end, not only are they wrong on that level, but they're mazikin, and they have to pay back the Erev committee. They have to pay back the public. They ripped down an Erev that cost money. That effort went into putting up the Erev, and you dare to rip it down? You are mazikim, you owe money, and you all know if you can't find the person who you owe the money to, or it's owned to a public thoroughfare, you have to contribute to the public. And someone asked me after class, or during the week, what actually happened? Did they actually pay up? My educated guess is that they did not pay up, but I don't know. I don't know. I cannot swear. But he says this in the tshuva, how hilchata de mashichata, I'll put it. But whether they paid up, I have my doubts. But as far as I know now, in Borough Park and in Flatbush, no one rips down the Erev. The Erev already is fait accompli. Hasidim carry. Litvakin yesh v'yesh. I saw with my own eyes Hasidim carrying Beresh Galei. You know, with the Erev, it's an Erev. It's no different than Yerushalayim. Okay. And now I want to move a step further and end off before I come into England. I have an unbelievable tshuva to show you. And I have to tell you in advance that if my Rebbeim, this ties in with the Monday class, if Rav Yeruchim Gerelik and Rav Noach Bornstein were sitting here, they'd lift me up and throw me out very elegantly. Their minds could not comprehend a tshuva like this. But I didn't need the latest Jewish Action. Everyone's talking about Jewish Action. It's coming out with an article that's already on the website, I understand, about the Neo-Hasidus and what's happening in YU. And pictures of my Talmud, the Eish Kodesh Rebbe, Rev Moshe Weinberger, and I've been educated, you understand? My children educated me. I can't go into detail, but my children educated me. We once had a Rebbe here. I went to Fabrengen's. I was crying like a baby. Thousands of people, kippot srugot, and the women who knit the kippot srugot, who crochet the kippot srugot, I think is the proper term. And Nebuch, it all, you know what I'm referring to, I don't want to mention the name, it all fell away, and I gave a whole shir in the kollel, a real litvish shir, that we can't depend upon any individual to be the ultimate Rebbe. But all right, as a chassid, as a shtickle of chassid today, maybe I have to revise that statement. But you see what's beautiful about the Mishnah Halachat, he now gets a question and he deals with it seriously. And you'll hear what he has to say. And boy, this is out of the Litvisha box. Chelik Ketvav, Mishnah Halachat, Siman Kuf Chaf Chet. And he doesn't give the name, you see he addresses the person. It's the tshuva was written in 1990. And he doesn't give you the name because it would be embarrassing for the person. It's obviously someone who is not blessed with children. And I don't have to tell you all of Sefer Bereshit, Sari Menu, Rachel Imenu. You don't have to go Chana Imenu, who we learned Tefillah from. It's a basic theme, one of the great tragedies of women who can't have children. And a basic theme of trust in God, love of God. Ultimately, there's comfort in Yeshayahu, Kama Hashem Lesirisim, that if you're Shem Shabbos and you're a good Jew, it's more important even than children. And you have to function on many levels when it comes to this very delicate question. I don't have to tell you Israel stands at the head of the world as far as helping couples that can't conceive and working with them, and all types of miracles have been done here. And the halacha you have here in the Kola from Pua, I believe you have lectures during the year, and the Rabbi Brander, Kenny Brander, is an expert on this topic, and a tremendous work is done in the state of Israel. All right, what's the Shaila? This person asked Reb Menashe Klein that, is there anything to what people say that building an Erev is a skula to have children? People who don't have children contribute, help, guide, build an Erev, and God will, you become then ki'ilu a tzaddik, tzaddik geyser, v'hakadosh baruch hu mekayem. And this guy even says, and even if I don't get a bracha from a tzaddik, will it still help? This is a real Hasidic question. If you asked this question in YU in my time, they would have lifted you out and thrown you out the door. You, Alex, you want a proof? They brought in the early 50s, Chabad was starting to conquer the world. And some of us wanted to know what Chabad was about. We brought in a Chabadnik to teach Tanya Thursday evening. The Rebbeim found out if that Chabadnik tried to come back to YU, there were 50 dragons with swords waiting to chop him into little pieces and ship him off to Russia, where Chabad began. You understand?
We should study Abikoras across the street.
Yeah, that would say that, but Abikoras is part of the Western world. If you're going to live in it, you got to know what the heck they think. Believe me. Their attitude, I don't mention who, but you know who led the battle? Rabbi Tandla. He was furious. He was going through the ceiling. He was very a very dominant figure at that time. And by the way, he's a great individual. If you get to know Rabbi Moshe David Tandla, it's really, really a great individual on his own. Forget about the fact who his father-in-law is. So, what went on? But this is a real Hasidic question. And you know what's amazing? Reb Menashe Klein is going to answer it seriously. And he says, I heard the same thing from B'Shem Tzaddikim, and I heard it from my Rebbe, the Kloisenberger Rebbe as well. It was known as the Sons of a Rebbe, Sons of Rebbe. So if I don't know how to pronounce it already, forget it. I've always pronounced it Sansava, but they tell me it's Sanser if I'm not mistaken. But I heard it from the Kloisenberger Rebbe as well, and then he tells the following story. V'uvdu yedua me'evrei chachad shelo hayu banim sheish shanim acharei hachatuna v'hitnadev la'asot erev b'Union City. Now, first of all, Rabbi Brzezinski knows, but why Union City? I don't expect you to know, Shmuley. But no, what do you say? What do you say? Why, Rafi, why Union City? You fellas don't know. That's where Kloisenberg was located, in Union City. That's next to Jersey City. It's right across the bridge. And that's where Kloisenberg was located. And
they're still there.
Still there. They're here too. They're in Israel. You got that. There are two Rebbeim today, one in America and one in the here, Kiyat Sons, and the Rebbeim get along, the two brothers, Baruch Hashem, it's not Bavav, it's not Satma, Kenayim Hara. And he built an Erev, and take a look what happened. He came to me, Rabbi, to help him, Lahakshir, to Erev, to guide him, Vayitisham, Vitikanti, Vyatzaba, Heksha, Vacherzeze, Shamati, Sheba, Ota Shana, Nolad Lahavrei Hanal Ben Zahar. Wow. So, you see, he treats it seriously. He doesn't dismiss the question. But now he gives a drash, unbelievable, in the tshuva. And he says, I don't know where to find the source for this in Chazal. But if the Rebbeim say it, it has to be true. And maybe I have a source. And he quotes the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Kuf Yud Chet Amid Bet. Ilomale Shamru Yisrael Shtei Shabbatot Miyad hayu nigalim. If the Jews would observe two Shabbatot in a row, you notice in South Africa where they began the concept of Shabbat, it's one Shabbat, but two Shabbatot in a row, miyad Mashiach would come, we would be redeemed. And that's a very interesting Gemara. I mean, I have a very basic question. I don't understand two, either one or three. Either you need a chazaka or just one. Why two? Where does two fit in? But if you know the modern world, no one will believe you if you'll say all the Jews deserve Shabbat. If that happens 2 weeks in a row already, it's hard to deny it. But all right, that's a vitz, that's a joke, let's put it that way. But it's a fascinating Gemara. Aye, but Tosfos asks the question, what do you mean Ben David will come if you only observe two Shabbatot? If Tosfos quotes the tradition, the Yom Rabbi Yossi, Ein Ben David Bo Ad Sheyakalu Kol HaNeshamot Shebeguf. And you look into the tshuva, he quotes this tradition, he quotes this chazal, he quotes the Tosfot, Mesechet Nida, Daf Yud Gimel Amid Bet, Divrei HaMatchil, Ad Sheyakalu. And he asked the question, what do you mean you observe two Shabbatot? But all these children have to be born. And if they're not born, how can Ben David come? So this is Tosfos' question. And Menashe HaKotan turns it around and says, this is exactly the pshat, that if you observe two Shabbatot in a row, then God will see to it that all the neshamot that have to be born are born. And if this is the case, if you build an Erev, you enhance Shmirat Shabbat. People are no longer being over on Hotza'ah b'Shabbat. There's an Erev. You make Shabbat oneg. You make Shabbat more enjoyable. People can go out, people can carry, women can take out children. You're enhancing Shmirat Shabbat. And if this is the case, God will see to it that more children will be born and Ben David can come. And that's why Rabbi Menashe Klein says this has to be the pshat, that if you help build an Erev, you will be blessed with a child. And kiven the mosif b'shmirat Shabbat, yavo hagoel tzedek. Ulaze yifkedu hasarisim nimtza diasiyat erev skula lebanim v'hevein. Understand the depth of what I'm saying. Beautiful tshuva. And this is what's unique about Rav Menashe Klein. Chassidus and Kabbalah enter into his response to literature. Be'ezrat Hashem, later this year or next year, Be'ezrat Hashem, God should give us strength. We will be able to show you many examples where the borderlines are down between pure halacha and Haggadah, Chassidus, and Kabbalah, right in the Chivat. He's unique. He lives in many worlds. Okay. We have arrived. His Majesty's Empire. Don't correct me, Shvulin. I know what I'm saying. Very fascinating. The first Erev ever built in His Majesty's Empire was in Manchester over 100 years ago. The person who built the Erev is very fascinating from a historical point of view for those of us who grew up in the United States and have studied Torah history in America. The story is as follows. Manchester had a immigrant East European community. Many of these people were accustomed to having an Erev in the Alte Heim. And in Manchester, that's where they first started to talk about an Erev. But in order to build an Erev, you need a Rav, you need a big Talmud Chacham. By and large, the Rabbanim who serviced the Anglo community were very Anglicized, very polished, very successful. They kept English Jewry and South African Jewry and Australian Jewry very traditional. Even if you didn't daven in a shul, but the shul you didn't daven in was an Orthodox shul. But most of these rabbis, or all of these rabbis, were very fine Yireim v'shleimim, Talmidei Chachamim, Anglicized in the full sense of the word. But they were not Gedolei Yisrael in the sense that we know of a Posek Mufak from Litva, from Poland, from the Ukraine. They were not on that level. But there was an individual, his name, Rav Avraham Aharon Yudalevich. Yudalevich, Yud Vav Dalid Lamed Vav Vet Yud Tzadi. Now, this Yudalevich was a very fascinating individual. And those of you who will study psychology will meet people like him, as you will see. He was born in 1850, born in White Russia. His mother died when he was very young. His father sent him away to study with his uncle, who was a Rav in Kobrin. His uncle was a big Talmud Chacham, and the uncle realized immediately that this kid was a genius. I was talking with a grandson over, he called me Friday to wish a Shabbat Shalom, so he just started Hesder in Alon Shvot. And he's telling me about Rabbi Lichtenstein, how the word is out from the older students that he's a Gon Shebegoinim, a genius. So I told my grandson, I don't need you to tell me that. I discovered that when I met Rabbi Aaron in 1951. I came into the yeshiva, it was a smaller yeshiva, and you could be a freshman in MTA, and you could be friendly with the lions of the yeshiva, who were 5-6 years older. Rabbi Aaron, we used to play basketball that summer. We learned at 9 to 1 in the Beis Medrash. We'd eat lunch, and then in the early afternoon we'd have a basketball game, and we invited our Rebbe, Rav Shmuel Feibershevitz, that was a Shanghai survivor, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, he later taught in BTA. So he came down to watch us. And you know, never, these people, they were Mir, Shanghai, Brooklyn, but they never really left Mir. And the next day, when we came to Shir, he said, oh, I'll say it in English, oh, I'm so happy that you came. I said, Rebbe, why did you think we wouldn't come today? Well, I've had that coming. And he said, well, the way you played ball, you were sweating. I thought you'd need a few days to recover. He doesn't know what ball playing is about. The Yankees used to play ball, and they went out and got drunk, and the next day they were there. Mickey Mantle, one day he was dead drunk. He came to the state, never even took batting practice. That day he had 2 tremendous home runs. So Casey Stengel said, halavai, he should get drunk every time he has to play. So, Reb Aaron a genius, but Yudalevich was a genius. He left his uncle and went to Voloshin. And he was one of the top students in Voloshin. Then he went into the rabbinate and went from community to community to community. Et hatzich gewalget. Wandered around. And when you get to see his personality, and I'll refer you to a volume that came out many years ago, a doctorate done at Columbia University by Dr. Hal Gadsworth. He lives in Yerushalayim, lives in Katamon. Dr. Gadsworth did a doctorate entitled, that was published by Kennicott Press under the title Fraud, Corruption, and Holiness. And we'll come to that. It gets involved with the Kashrut in New York. And one of the stars in the book is Yudalevich. And you see, certain people who are geniuses simply can't get along with other people. They know more. Yeah, you can know more. But there's a reality to the world. If I can make an analysis, if you're reading what's going on in the Israeli press, the Yud started a whole campaign, everyone should vote. So they're interviewing people, every issue, they're interviewing people. And by the way, the Yud, they're giving it out free in Machne Yehuda. This morning, I was in the Kupat Cholim, and I'm walking through Machne Yehuda. I had to get some things there, and I got two free newspapers. It's worth living here, better than New York. It's like getting the New York Times and Daily Znut free of charge. I got Yisrael Hayom, and Yediot. And Yediot is running a campaign, and they interview Menachem. They say to Menachem, why didn't you vote in the last election? And Menachem gives the classic answer, I'm fed up, no one is good, no one is perfect. I told off a Gadol b'Yisrael after the last election, he told his kids not to vote, no one is good, no one is perfect. I said, you're giving your children the worst education possible. We have to deal with a reality. It's a real world. And in this real world, we have to function and be matzliach and be successful and influence. Not every bright person is capable of doing that. Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein had that ability. He could be one of the boys, and he was. We used to call him the babe. He had a baby face, and he was Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, a gon adir. Not every Gadol b'Yisrael has that ability. Rabbi Yudel Lovitch couldn't get along. This was part of his personality. It's not, he knew too much. He knew too much. The Rocket Shepherd, I don't have to tell you, one of the reasons that people were upset with Rabbi Nassim Kamenetsky, he tells the story, if I have it right and my memory is good, in Making of a Gadol, that the Rocket Shepherd got so angry at Rabbi Chaim Moisey Gozhinsky when he started bothering with what the Rocket Shepherd considered a Narish Shaila, he threw a chair at him. You understand? That's the Rocket Shepherd. This Yudel Lovitch. All right, why am I telling you this? You'll see the way his life develops. And by the way, it's a very fascinating topic for a doctorate. There's a lot of material available to do the research and the rabbinic journals, and you'll see the big machloket at the end.
But what's the topic for the doctorate?
Who this Avraham Aaron Yudel Lovitch was, the individual, Rabbi Yudel Lovitch and his era. And here you have a man who grew up in Europe, Manchester, and then the United States. Now, he comes to Manchester running away from Europe, and he's in Manchester a number of years, a number of important years. His family, most of his family remains in Manchester, and he has a tremendous impact. He's highly revered. Why is he highly revered? And the person doing the research, let me give you the name, it's Rabbi Elazar Reich, who's a little older than I am, if I understand correctly. He's corresponded with me over the years already, over the decade. He listens via the website. He has smicha from Israel. He studied in Hebron. He published a beautiful book of a memoir of the Chazon Ish, all the gedolim he met when he studied here in the early 50s. And he did the research. He gives you sources where he got it from, because he didn't know Rabbi Yudel Lovitch personally. And Rabbi Yudel Lovitch is revered because where do you get a rabbi of this level in England? And he builds an Erev in Manchester. Now, no one can discover what the lines were, where it was built, how he built it, what he used for Tzirat HaPetach. Rabbi Reich tried. He lives in Manchester. He got nowhere. He guesses that it was built in the areas that were then inhabited by the East European immigrants. Then there was some sort of scandal. Rumors were spread about the Rav, and totally unfounded rumors. He had opposition, and I don't have to tell you what goes on. And in 1908, he came to the United States to become rabbi in Bayonne, New Jersey. Bayonne had a very chashuva kehila there. He was later followed in Bayonne. You can tell me the name. Anyone know? Rabbi Reuven Katz. Rabbi Reuven Katz, a Litvisha Gadol, comes to America from Bayonne. He goes to Petach Tikva to become the chief rabbi of Petach Tikva. His son taught at yeshiva for many years. my Rebbe, Reb Michal Katz, Sefer Tzadik Levracha. He had another son who taught Bible in the Leon Katz, Sefer Tzadik Levracha.
Spielberg is a great granddaughter.
And married to Spielberg's sister. Oh, married to Spielberg?
She is Spielberg's sister.
She is married to Leon Katz's son, Shimon.
Ah, she is the younger sister. The two, the other sister is married to my student, Pasternak, Jerry Pasternak. They are totally from, you know the story, because the mother remarried and her second husband, Adler, was a Chabadnik. They may have all been Baal Tshuva, I don't know, but the two girls were raised from. The older one, Stephen, and he has a sister, I think, that's even older than him, that's also somehow involved in Hollywood. So there, I believe their homes are kosher, but it's not, it's like a house out of the Bronx in the 1940s, where we grew up, the 1950s. But the two younger sisters are solid 100% of the Jerry Pasternak, the dear student. Anyway, so there were ugly rumors, and he came to America. Yeshivas Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan invited him for a while to say Shayurim in the yeshiva. He was a Gaon Adir. Then he went to New Haven, Connecticut, where he had a son living. And then he went to Boston. And in Boston, his wife died, and he was in poor health, and he came back to New York, where he had another son. And here in New York, he got involved in heavy kashrut. And there was a tremendous machloket with the Agudas HaRabbanim. Now, here he says in his research, in early in 1918, Rav Yehuda Lovitch co-founded a union of Rabbanim in rivalry with the existing Agudas Rabbanim, which he shunned, as it included non-orthodox elements. So I'm addressing Rabbi Reich now. Reich, I would like to know, what do you mean by non-orthodox elements? Because to the best of my knowledge, the Agudas HaRabbanim never included non-orthodox elements. Maybe it means they had a relationship with some of the faculty at the seminary. But the seminary at that point in time was an orthodox institution. It's before Mordechai Kaplan. And the seminary had some people on the faculty who were big lamdanim, poskim, yireim v'shleimim. Rabbi Heimson, I give an example. He was from England originally. He translated part of the Rambam, part of the Shulchan Aruch, into English. A big Talmud Chacham. There were others. I don't know if Louis Ginsberg was already at the seminary. Ginsberg was the Telzer Eloi. We spoke about it 2 years ago, whatever. Anyway, be it as it may, he founded this organization. Now, the truth of the matter is, it was Margulis versus Margulis, Kramer versus Kramer. The Agudas HaRabbanim, the leading Rav at this time, is a name you all know, Ramaz, Rabbi Moshe Zvulun Margulis, the grandfather-in-law of Rabbi Joseph Lichtenstein, the great-grandfather of Rabbi Haskell Lichtenstein. He represented the Agudas HaRabbanim. Rabbi Gavriel Zev Margulis was an individual like Rabbi Yehuda Lovitch, very brilliant, and they fought the Agudas HaRabbanim. And they got involved in controversy on Hechsherim. You should know there was a Rabbi Barashansky. Have you come across any of his descendants?
Yes, Barashansky and Zinek.
That has to be a grandson. What's his first name?
Nachman.
That has to be a grandson. I went to school with Barashansky's. Their grandfather, too, is a Rav who came out against the Agudas HaRabbanim. And what went on with the chickens and the meat in New York? All I can tell you is Rabbi Yosef Weiss once told me a wonderful joke, but unfortunately, a bitter gelechta, if you know Yiddish, a bitter laugh at that joke. My Rebbe, Rabbi Yosef Weiss, my only Rebbe alive, should live and be well. He said to me, he knew a Jew when he saw what was going on, machlokes among the rabbanim, and he knew some of the facts that Gaspers writes about in fraud, holiness, and corruption, he decided never to eat meat and chicken in America. So his doctor told him, you need protein, you have to eat peanuts. So he lived on peanuts and milk products. And then he found out all the peanuts he were eating were roasted in lard. In those days, the main shortening was pure lard. And that was Rabbi Yehuda Lubavitch. But now let me go one step further. And here we're coming in. And this has nothing to do with Erev, but it has to do with Rabbi Yehuda Lubavitch. And for your doctor, it's very important. And it comes into contemporary times. Because earlier today, I finished my notes for a major lecture in Boca Raton at their request on the atom bomb that is falling in the greater YU community, Zikui Haget. Now, you know about this, Robert Brzezinski? Okay, you're up to date. I don't know much. I only know what I read in the newspapers because I haven't seen a real document yet, but I know enough because I was involved in this many years ago. If you open up the Sefer, by Rabbi Antelman, you'll see three letters of mine reproduced with the stationery, the works, in this very topic. Now, what am I referring to? Without going into Zikui Haget, which is not for not for a class that we're dealing with a Reuven, but very important. We who are Torah Jews have good hearts. There is nothing more disturbing than a woman who is a classic aguna. Classic aguna, when a man refuses to give a get because he wants money. All right, in Israel we've more or less solved the problem. That's a Russia Marusha. It's horrible, horrendous, but even more horrible is a woman, it's a classic aguna. What do you mean by a classic aguna? You're familiar with the best book ever written since Shakespeare put down his pen, From Washington Avenue to Washington Street. In that book, I talk about an aguna problem. What was the problem? I understand in YU now there's a big discussion about the case I talk about there, the case I engendered from this very classroom. So, what's the problem? The woman needed chalitza, and the Yavam was in communist Russia, the head of a kolkhoz. Get a woman from Yerushalayim into Russia to get chalitza. It's a non-starter. You can't even think about it. But you feel very bad. You want to do whatever you can for the woman. And sometimes, because we want to help in any way possible, we don't realize that we're breaking down the halachic fence. And anyone who's a Talmud of the Rav, you know, the famous story, I cite the story in the Rav, where that fella falls in love with this girl who converted to Yiddishkeit after high school and they're postgraduate students, and she brings this fellow back to Yiddishkeit, and then he finds out he's a Kohen, and they come to the Rav, and the Rav said, I wish I could help you, but I can't. There's a halacha. And then he says they had to walk away and start all over again. And this is a tragedy. It's a human tragedy, but there's the halacha. And are we Reform Jews or are we Torah Jews? Are we conservative Jews? Conservative today is Reform. There's no difference. It's even worse than Reform on a certain level because there's some elements in conservative Judaism totally deny any vestige of halacha. And what do we do? What do we do? So Zikui Get, here you come where you try to find a solution. Rabbi Rachman had a cut condition. All right, I have what to say about it, but it's not for now. Can you believe this? There was this, by the way, one of a number of famous cases where a woman is in America and she needs chalitza from a yavin who is behind the Soviet Union already, 1920s. Can the Yavam make a shliach to do the chalitza? And this was the question that came up. Can it only be performed by the linked parties, or can either the widow of the Leverite substitute a proxy? Agents are frequently used in Gittin. Why not in chalitzat? And you all know in Gittin, many times we make a shliach to deliver the get. That's the famous story in Boston, where that guy demanded whatever it was, $10,000 in cash. The Rub was holding the money. The girl refused to come to the divorce session. She didn't want to look at the rusher in his face, even though a year earlier the Rub and her parents pleaded with her not to marry him. And the Rub was Masada the get, al yedei shaliach. And the ex-husband or ex-to-be husband or to-be ex-husband walked into a Beis Medrash. He remembered the Gemara he learned in his youth in Talmud Torah, and he said, I hate my wife, but I did a bad mistake. Why should I divorce her? I want to annul the get. And now the Rav had a she'elah which can take your life away. The guy walked off with $10,000 in cash. It's not a question of canceling a check. And maybe the get isn't worth the parchment it is written on. Adam, just think about that little question. So, you want to do what you can. You want to try to help. And believe it or not, Rabbi Yudah Lovitch came up with the position that the yavam behind the Iron Curtain can make a shliach and give his sister-in-law Chlitza. A U.S.-based lady, Gisa, daughter of Yehuda Leidel, had been prematurely widowed. She left no children, and her husband's only brother lived in a Ukraine shtetl. Getting them together was a practical impossibility. Gisa had left Russia illegally and faced imprisonment there. Tightened U.S. restrictions prevented the brother visiting America. The local Ukrainian Rav Akiva Sibersky suggested a proxy and consulted other Russian rabbanim. He also contacted the most eminent U.S. posek he was aware of, landing the she'elah on Rav Yudalevich's shtenda. And he goes on and on to describe the machlokes. It was a heavyweight machlokes. Rav Chaim Moshe Grzynski, Rabbi Sazal Meltzer, Rabbi Moshe Mordechai Epstein totally negated any such proposal. So you see, the end of his life, Rabbi Yudah Lovitch was caught up in terrible controversy. The Chalitza, the Shechita, the Agudas HaRabbanim, the organization that he had established with Rabbi Gavriel Zev Margolis. What's fascinating is that Rav Reich researches the sources, and in the rabbinic journals you have contradictory evidence. Rav Reuven Katz, who became the Rav of Bayonne, New Jersey, visited Rabbi Yudah Lovitch, and he says that Rabbi Yudah Lovitch regretted his stance but did not feel able to make the public recantation Rav Katz recommended, since he had been so strongly vilified by the European Rabbanim. But in the journal Degel HaRabbanim, there a different rabbi, Rav Baruch Shalom Trainin, visited Rav Yudah Lovitch in his last months, and he claims that Rav Yudah Lovitch was upset and bitter, but remained staunch in his stand that you could make a shliach to do the chalitza. Gentlemen, this machlokes comes up again. There's a whole chuntress, tshuva after tshuva in the Sri Deyesh on a similar machlokes that comes up in a number of years later. What a difficult situation, tragic, but halacha is halacha. To make a shliach to deliver a get is one thing. To make a shliach l'kadesh ha'isha, there's no problem. I think the Haredi world will solve the problem of men and women together at a wedding, intermingling. There are no women. The father of the girl appoints a shliach. The girl is over 12 and a half, so she'll appoint the shliach, l'kabel kedushin, And no woman has to show up at the wedding. That is fabulous. Let me tell you, Dove, if it would solve sexual misbehavior, I would sign on. But I can tell you, a guy named Weberman went to jail for life in America for what he did. I will not mouth it. I cannot mouth it. And they tell me when he walked in the street, he in Williamsburg, they have glasses that are, what would be the word, like when a window fogs up. What would be the word? Fogged up glasses, permanently smudged, so he shouldn't be able to look at women. Okay?
Hope he doesn't
gentlemen,
drive.
Forget about driving. He ain't going to drive. He got 50 years in jail for what he did. And believe me, the judge was lenient. My dear students, take it with a grain of salt. But coming back to Rav Yehuda Lovitch, I want to ask a simple question. Rabbi Reif, you did wonderful research, and he cites in the research two people who helped him. It's a fascinating chapter, and there's so much more that can be analyzed in Rav Yehuda Lovitch's life. That's what makes it fascinating. He taught at YU, that's a fact. I don't know how many years, a number of years. He gave Sherman Reeds. It's a fact that he fought the Agudas HaRabbanim. Fascinating. The Shliach for Chalitza, it opens a Pandora's box. Ultimately, if you can do that, so Zikuya get already is a Pachim Katanim, I would say. Gentlemen, why was there no Machlokes? He built an Erev in Manchester. No one is ripping it down, no one is cursing him, no one is fighting with him. Everyone is so proud they have a Rav who knows how to build an Erev. It's not a small matter to build an Erev. I have a lot of theoretical knowledge, but if I have to build an Erev, I have to call in an expert. I mean, he's no longer alive. My chavah is Shimi Aida. I call him. She will talk about Shimi Aida. Gotta call in an expert. There was a Rav in Cleveland, a Hasidic Rav, I believe. He was an expert. I don't know today. Today, Rabbi, who is the expert? Who would they call? Rabbi Schechter, I believe. Rabbi Heschel Schechter is an expert. Rabbi Moshe David Tandler is an expert. You have to know the practical matters, not just the theory. And here in Manchester, there was no machloket whatsoever. In London, they're killing each other on the streets until today. In Manchester, they just put up an Erev after so many years. They did it again. They tried in the 1970s. They got nowhere. I was just spoke with a Mancunian, if that's the right term, a Mancunian. Is it? Yeah, Mancunian. So I just spoke with a Mancunian. He told me that the Minchat Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Weiss, was opposed. He was the Rav of Manchester. Why was he opposed? He's an Ungarisha. Katam Seif, everything we spoke about. But he felt if you put in an Erev, people will carry outside the Erev. People will think, you know, it's like some of the people spoke in New York. I don't know. It turned out that all these fears were not grounded. People who worry about an Erev are good Jews, and good Jews know a rabbi has to teach them an Erev has boundaries. Everything, if we're going to start worrying about what people can do, you can't walk into a supermarket. You go into any supermarket outside of Israel, there's kosher, there's treif, right or wrong. No, we depend upon people. There's a ShopRite has many products on the Hashgacha, Pathmark in Toronto. I know I saw a tremendous kosher little supermarket attached to a major supermarket. And you go in, you get the real products that need the meat out of the oven, the bakery. That's in the kosher division. The food ready, ready-made the food, what people buy. And then you go into the big supermarket where you look for the OU, you look for the Chafkei, you look for the OK, etc., etc. But now in Manchester, they put up an Erev. And once again in Manchester, Machlokes. And yet, 110 years ago, no Machloket whatsoever. And I'll tell you what my theory is. Because 110 years ago, in Manchester, Jews were not that learned. Jews were not that learned. Even if you were Shomer Shabbos, you were a businessman. Marks and Spencer, that family, part of it lived in Manchester. He gives you the details in his research, Rabbi Reich. They built mikvot in Manchester. They were the happiest people alive that they were able to observe Yiddishkeit and not have persecution. But you didn't have major yeshivat. Who knew how to learn? Who knew what they riven's about? Who knew Masechet they riven? Even in my time, everyone said, Ani, the most difficult Masechet I riven, Nida Yevamet. Ani, poor. Today, take a riven out of that class because you have picture books, diagrams, digital diagrams. I have a book on a riven. I learned a riven from cover to cover for the third time the last few years. And I never understood every word until now. Why? The picture book. Beautiful. Magnificent. Steinsaltz, pictures don't compare to digital, computerized pictures on every sugya in a riven that has to be illustrated. But when you get involved in a riven, when you know how to learn, when you get involved with the Mishnah Brura, with the Bir Halacha that we spoke about last year, with the footnote in the Shmirat Shabbat Kehilchata that we spoke about last year, you got to know how to learn. And then you can have machlokes. Then already you get involved in Mishkanot Yaakov, the Bet Ephraim, Rishut Rabban D'Oraita, Tetzayin Amot, 600,000. But 110 years ago, the Jews were the happiest people in the world. They had a Rav in Manchester who was Gadol. Now, modern times, you can't escape the machloket. The problem with modern times is that we're so brainwashed that I have truth and no one else has truth. That's where all our heartache begins. Halavai, we would educate our youngsters. This is our opinion, but there are other opinions just as valid out there. No one has a monopoly on truth. Beit Hillel, Beit Shammai had many a machloket, but they intermarried even when it was machloket, when according to one point of view it would be mamzeret. They intermarried without any problem whatsoever. And this is a tragedy of our times. It reflects on what's going on in Panovich. It reflects on what's going on in Yerushalayim versus Bnei Brak. It's right down the line. It reflects a maneuver who is the head of the Moetzet Chachmei Shas can say in public that anyone wearing the Kippat Sugah is a Molech. I don't know how you guys don't all wear Kippat Sugah. I would, after that is said, I would put on in protest. I remember the liberal Jews marching for the blacks. Everyone put on a black beanie afterwards to show identity with the blacks down south. To show identity with those courageous people who fought. Look what goes on until today with the blacks and the whites in America. I don't know. Every Jew who wears a kippah sugah, and he refused to back down. And that's the same individual who set up the kotel in the fighting this summer. He said, what do we need an army for? God will fight for us. Ribbono shel Olam, where is he coming from? And that is Das Torah? That's Das Apikursus, in my opinion. Wow. It's a tragedy. It's the machloket. Now, London. And again, today we travel. Shmuley Segel has been in America. What the heck were you doing in America? You went to YU. Even without going to YU, you traveled today. I've been to London. I haven't seen the Queen yet, but I've seen her on television quite live right there. And I've heard English friends of mine tell me how they cried. Women tell me they cried when they met the Queen. Let me tell you, as a born American, believe me, I would not cry when I met Obama or Clinton or Ribbono shel Olam, JFK. God have mercy on us, who our presidents have been and their lifestyle, okay? Oh my, let me not go further. Let's get back here. So, I've been to London, you've been to New York. Now, what happens is, it's a global village today. Rav Heschel Schechter speaks in London and he says a word that we grew up with. The Rav used to use that word in Shir. I don't want to use the word, I don't want to get into trouble. But boy, did they jump on him. It was unbelievable. So you see, when someone from London comes to New York, he sees in Queens, a neighbor of here, a neighbor of there, Brooklyn, Manhattan today, Teaneck, Englewood, Muncie, Maplewood, New Jersey has an Arif. Do I have to go further? It's an Arif. I can't believe it, what they did there. And they've long forgot that the first rabbi who built the Kehillah against all odds was a guy named Ani Rufko. That's life. Vayokum da Chadash. I know they forgot. I figured after Washington comes out, someone will contact me. No one. Even they have an Arif. So people from London traveling back and forth reached the obvious conclusion. Why can't we have an Arif? Why must we suffer? Tremendous machloket broke out, which unfortunately lasted until today. I saw the machloket with my own eyes. I saw there's a famous shul in Golders Green. It's called Monk's Shul. Of course, there was a rabbi monk there for many years. Hasn't he been dead already? What is it, 20? Excuse me?
Isn't Rabbi Sheldon the rabbi?
He's retired.
No, there's already two of rabbis beyond Rabbi Monk. And I saw in the shul a sign that is something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing it, if you carry on Shabbos, means if you're Samach on the Erev, you can't have an aliyah, and you can't be a member of the synagogue. And people even told me, and they swear it's true, that a man came in with a cane on Shabbos, and the rabbi, the Bal Korei, and the Shamas didn't know, and they gave the man aliyah, and the rabbi found out afterwards he came with the cane, he had them lay in the Torah over again. This is what I'm told. People sweat them. Halachically, it could be you can use a cane Shabbos. It looked like into the halacha. You're asking me? Of course not. But why did he do it? Because he considered the guy using a cane. And evidently, he felt he didn't really need a cane. So, Tiddur and Machal Shabbos. In Monk Shul, you don't give Machal Shabbos in Aliyah. It's not Chester, Pennsylvania.
Who gave this rabbi the head of the
He's the Rav of the Kehillah. What do you want? Anyway, unbelievable machloket. Now, the machloket was so great that those people who put up the Erev, and these were good, very good Jews. Among them, you had the United Synagogue crowd, which you would call modern Orthodox. You had descendants of the Hasidisha world, the Ungarisha world, people who were used for an Erev. The machloket was so great that they did something very intelligent. And here, you learn from Australia, and I'll come to Australia, but not yet. Australia is an interesting story. But in Australia, when they wanted to put up the Erev, they knew they needed someone who was very well known internationally. So they brought Reb Moshe David Tendler. He got involved, he put up about 85% of the Erev. Had to go back to America, and pressure was put on him. How can you, the son-in-law of Reb Moshe Feinstein, put up an Erev in a big city like Melbourne? And he said, I can't come back. I can't handle the pressure. Get someone else. So they got Reb Shimon Ida to come down to Melbourne. And when Reb Shimon Ida finished off the Erev and gave it a hechsher, everyone accepted it in Melbourne, more or less. You're always going to have a discord because we're Jews. Ein malasot, nein malasot. Rav Usher Weiss's hesped that I cited before. Halavai, every Jew would live by it. In London, who did they bring to put up the Erev? They brought exactly the people who put up the Erev, God the Erev, check the Erev, repair the Erev in Yerushalayim, Yer HaKodesh. Now, but they did more than that. They published a book, and I'm going to quote from the book extensively, a very high... Excuse me?
This was a PR book.
Right, it's a very high-class, glossy book in English, in Hebrew, you use the word piyah here, and it shows you here. If you're really from this picture, it has to convince you, you can't fight the Erev. That's Rav Eliashiv with Rav Aaron Prowl, who was the Av Beit Din of London, who was the biggest London, and he accepted the Erev. And here they're talking. There's a letter from Rav Eliashiv. And, excuse me?
He
was Machshir the Erev. He worked with the committee. But then they bring in the great mitzvah of establishing an Erev. And notice the pictures. I love, you see, you're not going to see a guy looking like Reb Kefet there, or looking like Reb Baron Lichtenstein. Who do you see here? You see here the Chatam Sefer, Reb Yehoshua Leib Diskin, the Chafetz Chaim, the Chazon Ish, and then they call it the Erev Hamuhuda. This isn't the plain Erev put up by Johnny Come Latelys. Here they show you the London based in, but here, experts from Eretz Yisrael validate the Erev. There are the three Rabbanim facing Rab Aaron Trau talking about the Erev. But I have to tell you, Rav Chanukah and Trau, the people had tremendous derech eretz for him. My daughter, you know, for her work with the Bat Dinim here, tells me he's an ace. So you can imagine, and look what these people look like. Rikmani Shalalim, would you buy a used car from him? Absolutely. Would you buy a lulav in it? Absolutely. Would you buy shmura matzah? Absolutely. Here's one, two, here, one, and the three Yerushalayim were brought over. Wow. Here's the third one. Oh, wow. What? Kanayim Hara. And the book goes on and on. Letters from Gedolei Yisrael. The story of the Erev. How they put it up. And a map. And the Hebrew section. The English section. The Halachic sections. This was really something. Did it help? Well, it didn't convince Rabbi Mungshu. But someone who understands the issues well. It's an Erev, as the people who put it up say, as good as the Erev in Yerushalayim. Now, I want to start quoting from the book, and we're going to get involved in it's very fascinating, a problem that comes up in London that they sweep under the carpet in America. It's interesting, and I'll give you reasons. I'll show you what Gedolei Yisrael have to say about it. But first, let's begin at the beginning. The Erev Hamahuda in Northwest London, published 2008. In a rare interview, the first of its kind, Hagon David Eisenstein Shlita enumerates the main Hidurim that were used in making the Erev in London. And just listen to this. We measured both the size of a tefach and an amma according to both the Chazon Ish and Rab Chaim Na'er, always l'chumra. You all know that this machlok is right down the line between Rav Na'er and the Chazon Ish. I believe the Chazon Ish's shear is larger than Rav Na'er, and they did it all l'chumra. Beautiful. We're making the surrounded mechitzot. We never relied upon a shrubbery nor a tail hamitlaket. All mechitzot are made from solid walls only. So you see, whenever they had to make mechitzot, they didn't take any kula. It could be you can rely upon shrubbery. It could be tail hamitlaket. When there's an incline, it becomes a natural boundary. For instance, down at the sea, something built up, a little wall built up with dirt, with sand, which is solid and will remain there unless there's an abnormal hurricane. They didn't rely upon any kulat. Any mechitza was a wall of 10 tefachim. Okay? On all four sides of the Erev, the mechitza are all made merubah al haparutz. Show there is no chance of a reshut harabim the Oraita. Okay? That wherever they're depending upon walls to fence in an area, always, no matter, wherever there's a breach in the walls, nevertheless, ha'omeid merubal ha'parutz. Once you have ha'omeid merubal ha'parutz, it's no longer a shitarab in the Oraita. All you have to do to the areas that need a tikkun is a tzirat ha'petach. But you never get involved with any problem the Oraita. Here, every one of the tzirat ha'petach was constructed with the almost utmost tidur in a way that the horizontal chut lies directly upon the two side kanim. And you all know what that means. That's one of the biggest problems you have when you use telephone lines or use electric wires. You need, where the posts are, the wire has to pass over the post. It doesn't have to touch the post. It can be way up in the air, but it has to pass over the post. And that's why many times when they build an eruv, they have to add wood or metal to the post so that the wire will pass over that part that's added. Here, Rabbi Eisenstein, who was personally undertaken to oversee the project of enhancing the kashrut of the eruv, including all the complex logistics involved in such a major project, he met personally with almost every rav in the city, including some who do not publicly support the eruv. He also personally accompanied every rav who wished to survey the eruv to observe firsthand the high standard and hidurim in the eruv. By doing so, he hoped to show that the eruv is kosher to the highest standards, with the hope that peace and harmony will reign once again in our community. And you see, this is very, very important. If you give hashgacha, will you allow other rabbis to come in? Will you allow outsiders to oversee what you're doing? If you're smart and have nothing to hide, absolutely. Be generous of spirit. Allow them in. Allow them to see. There can be a machloket at times, but it can be a machloket in psak. You have to justify your position. Elu v'elu. But this was a real attempt, from what I gather, I heard this from eyewitnesses, ear witnesses, people involved in London, a real attempt to unite the community that there shouldn't be machloket. You want to be machmir, you can be machmir. We'll talk about that. You'll see what they have to say. Then they ask him a question. As one who has much experience in a riven and has overseen a riven all over the world, can the Rav point what makes the Arab stand out above all others? Certainly, the London Arab is unique in many aspects, but I think that the thing that stands out most is that the London Arab has the vast majority of its mechitzah, fences, partitions, constructed from solid walls, omeid merubah al haparutz. This is remarkable, given the large area enclosed by the Arab. Thus, there are relatively few tzurat ha-petach, constructed doorways, and hardly any places requiring two consecutive tzurat ha-petach. In other words, you have a tzurat ha-petach, then a wall, then a tzurat ha-petach. Then you would have a wall, then a tzurat ha-petach, but not one next to each other. This is largely due, in my opinion, to the Gaon Rav Shimon Ida Zecher Tzadik Levracha, who is a student of Rav Moshe Feinstein and a world-renowned expert on a Reuven. It was he, with his profound expertise in a Reuven, who originally designed the Erev perimeter route. So you see, Shimi Ida was involved in the London Erev as well. A few words about Shimi Ida. Shimi Ida was a Brooklyn boy, part of our generation, came from a similar home that we all came from, went to BTA, came to Yeshiva College, was a Yitzchak, he was your classmate, right? He was a year behind me, he was your classmate, and very edel, We used to sit the Thursday, I believe it was, there was club hour. You ended shir at 2:30, so it was a half hour off the Gemara and a half hour off the college began at 3:30, as I recall. So you daven mincha, and then you chose the club you wanted to go to. Yitzchak and I and Shimi Ida with a few others came to the Musa club. And that was our club with the Mashkiach. We'll talk about the Mashkiach in the Monday class. Not tomorrow, but the day next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. We'll talk about the Mashkiach. And we came to his class, his Seder, Avad we called it. And we were in a different world. We were transported to the world of Slabatka, to the world of Mir, of Reuven Levavitz, the Mir of Mashkiach. A different world. We lived in the Bronx, we lived in New York, we lived in Boston, we lived in Brooklyn, but part of us lived very far away in the Litta of old. And that's how we knew Shimi Ida. When he graduated college, he went on, as I recall, to Lakewood, and he learned and became a halachal, a maisa. Mastered his books on Shabbos, his books on Nida, he outstanding halacha lemaisa, and he bothered Reb Moshe Feinstein. Reb Moshe had an open door then to Reb Moshe Feinstein, didn't have to go through any mesharsim, it's not like later you have to go through Mordechai Tendler. He had an open door to Reb Moshe Feinstein, and he became a great expert in Eruvin. He died young. Personal life is different than the public life, and I mourn him. I remember him so fondly. The last time I met him was in a restaurant in Yerushalayim. He's there with his second wife, and we were there, and others were there. And I invited him. I said, come see what's going on in Gris Kollel, but he went back to America the next day, I believe. And that was Shimi Ida, very unique, very fine individual. Let me just go one second further. Can the Rav explain to us the halachic principles upon which the London Erev is based? The London Erev, and come with most Erev in the world, is based primarily upon the rulings of the Chazon Ish and his numerous other poskim. The Chazon Ish states that even if a public domain through which 600,000 people pass every day is nonetheless considered a private domain if the streets are surrounded by buildings or fences which make up more solid partition than empty space. Once this has been achieved, it is sufficient to close up openings with a tzuraka petach, and no doors are necessary. As mentioned, this is the primary source for Eruvin around the world. And yes, you cannot escape the Chazon Ish. People who refer to the Chazon Ish, they generally say a chumra of the Chazon Ish. And he had chumras, and he had opinions that were different, that he fought for them. The greatest example is the international dateline. The Shanghai crowd, those in Kobe, Japan, how many days to keep, the whole story with those who didn't come because they were frightened of the Chazon Ish's opinion, remained behind, and by the time Sukkot was over, you could no longer get out. And he had opinions very strong. When it comes to a Reuven, he was, I don't want to say a Mekil, but it's his understanding of a Reuven in the modern city that is the source of all our Reuven today. There is no Reshut HaRabim D'Oraita in a big city. Mimon Efshach. If you have a big city, take a look at Yerushalayim. Where do you find a street without houses on either side? When the street dead ends, you already have on three sides. You can even wind up with examples on four sides. The minute you have that, you don't have any Rishut HaRabim D'Oraita. If you have an open desert where there are no houses, you're not going to have 600,000 people. So there too, you can build an Erev, you can be Mekil. But even where you have 600, it's still not harashut harabim deoraita. Now, let me endorse.
The only examples what you gave of like red square, was that what you said?
Red square, I always felt it was a reshut harabim deoraita because millions could fit into there, and millions did fit into there on May 1st, on the Achveis, on the anniversary, the yahrzeit of Achveis Lenin, you understand, when they, a military parade, the victory over World War II, and Red Square is open, it's open, it's not there, there is the Kremlin Wall, but that's only on one side, basically. Yeah, what do you say?
Three sides.
I don't recall three sides, Harry, yeah.
On one side,
alright, so then goom, yeah, I remember. Oh boy, boy, you're bringing back memories. But anyway, be it as it may, it's an example of what, in theory, if you forget about the walls surrounding it, you have millions of people. Then you have Gerevaz, the Jews, Goyim, etc., etc., every day, twice, three times a year. But I want to ask Shmuley one question. The next problem we're going to talk about next week, Be'ezrat Hashem, is the North Circular Road. Is that the road between Golders Green and Hendon?
Yeah.
Okay. And how do you cross? There's a bridge that you cross, a footbridge. A footbridge. Because people were killed, I understand, trying to cross. It's like Central Avenue in Far Rockaway in Lawrence, where people on Shabbos, they don't have a footbridge, and people have been killed by speeding cars. Okay, that's what I thought it was, but I wanted to be certain. Okay.
In Central London, there is no Eruv.
No, Central London, there is no Eruv, but you got to remember, Hendon and Golders Green is where the Jews, the Frum Jews live, and they're adjacent to each other. They're adjacent. By the way, we have not touched upon yet the unique problem of London that comes up, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Excuse me? Yeah. The unique problem, which in America too you should have, but you'll see what the post has to say. But it's a fascinating, fascinating topic. But, all right, you saw the valuable book. I'm taking it home to my safe, among my Manelli Garrett and some other book. Well, you should have one. You're from London. I got one when I visited London, and they were telling me about the Erev and the Machlokes and all that went on. So they gave me a copy of the book, Recovered of the Ferret. Now, let me just summarize. First of all, tomorrow I have a very big surprise. A lady will sit with me and interact with me on what I'm going to talk about. If you want to meet living history face to face, tomorrow's your chance. If your wives want to come, they're more than welcome. Who is this lady? I will introduce her tomorrow. That's number one. Number two, what did we do today? We said a few words. The words from Rav Asher Weiss are very moving. I mean, that story with the Kloisenberger Rebbe, it's overwhelming. And you see, Rav Asher Weiss already knows how to speak. When the Basha Twesky spoke, that poor lady, so I heard people in my world, right away they jump on her. How does she know what God wants? All right. He said it the opposite way. We don't know exactly. We can't play God. But, he quotes the Rambam, you've got to do a cheshbon and nefesh. And one of our big problems is the sinat chinam. Okay? Then we went into the tshuva of the Avreich, who would like to have children, and building an Erev. What a fascinating tshuva. What a story from the Kloisenberger in Union City. And what an interesting pshetel on the Gemara if the Jews observe two Shabbatot. He still doesn't solve my problem. Why two Shabbatot? Either one or three, but two. But all right, no one will believe it if you say one to every Jew is Shomer Shabbos. No one will believe it. But two Shabbatot already has to make an impact. Then we dealt with the Avraham Aaron Yudalevich. I thank Rabbi Elazar Reich. And then we went into London. The booklet that was published, The People Who Made the Erev, The Psychological Warfare. Now a few freebies. It's very big. Yutet Kislev Chabad. I don't know how they get the money, but they've rented all the Binyanei Ho'uman. They're running for men and women separate days. Sheyurim, but what's interesting is they have a display of invaluable Kitvei Yad. So if anyone's interested, just to see these Kitvei Yad here is unbelievable. This is from, this I'm going to give Rabbi Przanski. It's from one of the top heads of the yeshivas, Yeruchim. I have a grandson. I've had grandsons over the years. So my grandson is the gossip column. He wrote the gossip, what's going on. But there's a very fascinating article here by the son of Dr. Gillis, who was killed. He lived in Efrat, English. And the son writes what it's like here. Sipur Echad, Noam Gillis. You see the problems of a religious kid in the army with Chiloniyim and what goes on with Shabbos, Kashrut. Very, very fascinating. Anyone who's going to teach here, deal with children here, here is my student, is the editor of some wonderful students. Aryeh Weinberg is my student long before you were born. Aliyah Mested, he's a master of modern Hebrew. This is Midei Chodesh B'Chodesho, Cheshvan and Kislev, all the holidays on what to do with the youngsters. Those of you who recall the terrible story out of Washington, D.C., here is a woman who grew up there, married to someone you know from the REITS rabbinic program, Chani Lowenstein. And it's about how broken in spirit she is and why, with what happened in Kesher, Israel. I have two copies. You're welcome to it. Very moving. This is for Yomo. Seven reasons to explain Vladimir Putin's popularity cult. Too bad they didn't have my Shayurim and they didn't add an eighth reason. Anyone Chabad, again, what Chabad can do, this is the Assistant Minister of Religion, Avi Wartzman, who's from Beit Yehudi, attending the Kinas Shluchim. And Chabad, they do a fabulous job. This is a problem that haunts us in fundraising. I couldn't believe the New York Times would pick it up, but it's way beyond Jewish causes. When I grew up in YU, the Beis Medrash was called the Harry Fishel Beis Medrash. It has changed names so many times. Are you allowed to do that? The floor upstairs was this name, that name. When you give YU $100 million to name the Gris Kollel in your honor, for how many years does that entitle you? It's the New York Times article. Rakefet says 49 years, but see what they say. And here's again Canada, the ex-chassid from suing the government that they allowed him to grow up without a general education. This is an article for Yitz. These are pastors who didn't believe in psychology and psychologists. They now embrace talk of mental ills and sending their congregants for professional help. Which takes me back to a story with Mr. Abrams, Zichrono Levracha. By the way, no one is to leave. We're davening Marvin in one minute. Mr. Abrams, I had a student, and I say to Mr. Abrams, this is in the mid-60s, I say, Mr. Abrams, I think this kid needs psychological help. And Mr. Abrams looks at me, Arnold, you grew up without a psychologist. I grew up without a psychologist. And this young man will also grow up without a psychologist until we meet again tomorrow morning at 9:05. Das Vedanya. Adam, take over. Bahurachum.